The New Warehouse Podcast, hosted by Kevin Lawton, is your source for insights and ideas from the distribution, transportation, and logistics industry. A new episode every Monday morning brings you the latest from industry experts and thought leaders. And now, here's Kevin.
Hello and welcome to the New Warehouse Podcast. This is Kevin Lawton, your host. I'm here today with Joni Holman. I actually met Joni through an Apex workshop on inventory principles. And it was a great workshop, and you know, I'm loving Apex, as you guys know, from the blog and my Instagram. I'm currently enrolled in this CLTD program, and Apex recently also switched to ASCM. So I want to bring Joni on the show to talk to us a little bit about, you know, her career, what she's been through, and she's a trainer for some other things as well. So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Apex, and then we'll talk about inventory too, since that's one of her specialties. So Joni, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm happy to be talking to you again. I've missed you since our class.
I know. We had such a good workshop with Marianne and all the other folks.
Yeah, I know. It was a really interesting one, yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit, I guess, about you and kind of your background and how you got to this point in your career.
Cool. Well, how many hours do we have?
As many as you want.
So literally, I wanted to be a teacher since the third grade.
Okay.
And I was the first of three girls in a very, very blue-collar family in Port Orchard, Washington, and nobody in my family had ever gone to college before. And I wanted to, and I got straight A's in school, but my parents wanted me to work for a year, and then they would say that if I decided not to stay working and I still wanted to go to college, they'd figure out a way to pay for it. Well, I knew they didn't have the money.
Yeah.
So I didn't go to college, which is fine because my parents really did. I knew that they wanted the best for me. And I didn't turn out too bad.
Yeah, you're pretty good lady.
I moved from Port Orchard to the big city and started working for a number of little jobs. But the first manufacturing job I had was like in 1972, and it was a custom lighting manufacturer.
Okay.
And it was so cool to watch people estimate and work from drawings and actually build these beautiful chandeliers and room lights and parking lot lights. And we did some great projects there. And I started off as the office assistant and got to be bookkeeper, and then I got to be estimator. And it just kind of turned me on to manufacturing, and I really learned fast. And so, you know, fast forward about 25 years, and I've worked at three different companies by then, and I moved to the East Coast, and I was with an electronics company, and I learned all about working with thousands and thousands of parts. And our VP of manufacturing went to a just-in-time workshop at James Madison University here in Northern Virginia, and he came back after 2 days, and he goes, "We've got to do this right now. Figure out how to implement." And I literally, I thought I was a pretty smart person, but I had never heard the term just-in-time.
Okay.
So I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I knew that there were a whole bunch of really good schools here in the Northern Virginia area, and I started calling every one of them. I called all 12, and I asked them if they had a materials management program, and only one or two said yes. And even those at that time, this is probably about 1978.
Okay.
Even they didn't have a professor for it.
Interesting.
So then I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I reasoned that here in the in the D.C. area, there's every association on earth. There's every nonprofit for every industry type on earth. Mm-hmm. And I should be able to find it. Well, when you look in the white pages of the phone book, there's tons and tons and tons of them. So myself and my office assistant started going through the names, And we would ask everybody that we contacted, do you know about this? Do you have any resources about this thing called Just in Time? And it took us 3 days to get to the APs, like the American Production and Inventory Control Society. And when we got there and they asked, we asked, do you have anything about this just in time? We go, oh, yeah, we have about like 80 different books and classes and things like that. And I knew that that was my godsend.
That was a jackpot, huh?
Right, it was. So 1991, I joined APIX, and we did implement Lean, and it was successful for us. And I realized that the local chapter was like my mental health group, and everything that we were doing wrong at work was covered in the APIC CPIM material, and everything in the CPIM material I could relate to work, so it was like the perfect convergence of two forces. And as I stayed along with APIC, it got to be about 1996, and APIC brought out a new course called The Basics of Supply Chain Management, and I thought it was 10 weeks long, and all the other classes at that time were only 8 weeks long. We had two instructors who were both gentlemen, and I asked both of them if they wanted to teach this new class, and they didn't want the long commitment of the 10 weeks. So I thought, all right, so now what? So I thought, well, how hard could it be to teach basics? I mean, I didn't think I was an expert in anything, so we started teaching it, and it started out one night, then it got to be two nights a week, then three nights a week, then it was five nights a week that I was teaching this class, even on Friday nights. And by that time, it was about 1998, and the remanufacturing job that I had changed owners. And I was the only lady on the management team, and they decided they wanted to go in a different direction, and so they fired me. And they asked me what I was going to do, and I said, well, I guess I'm going to find a new job.
Yeah.
Then I realized that there was a whole bunch of people that were asking us to do classes during the daytime. We had not been able to do that because everybody was working. Everybody had a day.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and then one day that I was getting ready to go teach at a class, I was at a table, and I looked out in the back, and the maple tree in my backyard was losing its leaves, and they were falling down. It was just so beautiful, and I wondered, why didn't I ever notice that before? And, well, it was because I was always working, and I thought, well, I'm working now. I'm getting ready to go teach a class.
Yeah.
And it was like it all came back, and it was like, wow. Because of APIC, I was actually able to achieve my dream since childhood.
Of being a teacher, wow. That's incredible, yeah. So you had this kind of like almost like eureka moment, I guess, watching these.
It was fall. Like an epiphany, you know, and it was like, wow, God is good.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really a great story. I'm happy that you were able to find your passion like that, and you know, now continue to do it. That's really great. So you mentioned something actually, which I thought was interesting. So you mentioned that you were the only female manager on the management team. So how, you know, one of the things I think that's a big discussion in our industry now is getting more female interest, I guess, into the field. And I think, you know, there's a lot more now than there was, you know, back in that time. So how was that kind of going through that in manufacturing where, you know, it was typically male dominated, I would say, for a long time?
Well, I think that we make our own opportunities, and I've always been pretty ambitious, and I think I rose because I was a very fast learner, and I did have an affinity for doing the kinds of organizational, operational type of stuff, scheduling and planning and inventory control and stuff like that, but I also think that I listened really well to the people in the production when I was doing production scheduling. And so I was able to establish a really good rapport with them and also with the executive team as well. I could talk to both sides and get my point across and be able to make a case or a suggest a new idea and show people how it would work out. And I think it's gotten easier now, but I also have my own company now, so no, I don't have to care about working for someone else.
So you make the rules now, right?
I think I'm actually unemployable now. I just won't put up with the doodads for anything else.
Got it. Well, that's the way to be. You know, be independent and do your own thing. I think that's. It sounds like you're so happy doing it. You know, I think when I met you and you're teaching the class, you're such a happy individual, and I can tell you really enjoy what you do. And I think that's like really great.
Yeah, well, that class was taught by Marianne, but her and I are like two peas in a pod, so we both have the same kind of passion for teaching, and I feel blessed that I was able to take a wish and turn it into a job. First it was a hobby, and then I actually turned the hobby into a job, and now I have my own company, so that's... it's been sustainable for a lot of years, and I have the best job in the world, and I get to work with the best people in the world.
That's great to hear. So, you know, you mentioned Marianne. So, you know, aside from training for Apex, you also have this company called Supply Chain Mavens, correct? And you're partnered mm-hmm. with Marianne. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, I guess, how you got teamed up with Marianne and what Supply Chain Mavens is all about?
Cool. So Marianne and her family were in Florida, in Ocala, Florida, and it was too hot for them down there. So they moved up here where it would be cooler, right, in Northern Virginia in the Washington, D.C. area. And one night she came to a PDM, a professional development meeting that we were having. I can't even remember the topic, but at that point in time, we really were looking for a teacher for the Lean class. It was a standalone class. It wasn't integrated like we have now. And she said, we asked, you know, why everybody introduced themselves, and we asked why they were here. And she goes, well, I kind of am interested in teaching Lean for you guys. I understand you guys are looking for someone. And, of course, I just glommed onto that, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
So we just hit it off from the very moment, the first moment. And the first meeting we had with our other senior instructor, she brought a little handout. And I can't remember where the article came from, but on the picture, the front of it, there was a lady who had the funny glasses with the mustache from Groucho Marx.
Okay.
And the title of the article was Making Training Fun. And how much more people could retain if they were laughing and if they were having fun and if they had hands-on types of activities. And both of us were just amazed. This was just the kind of training that we wanted to do, and so we welcomed her. And she started teaching for us, and everybody just loved her, the students. She got wonderful, wonderful reviews. And some of those clients that she started off with here for the DC Metro chapter, we still have today.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so both of us had been through being the president of the chapter, being president of other chapters. We'd been on district staff and region staff, and Marianne had done a stint at the national board of directors as well. So we worked with chapters for a good 25 years, and it's so tough when you're working with volunteers to get enough resources, and often the volunteer team doesn't want to make decisions. They're very risk averse.
Yeah.
So we finally just got tired of it, and about, I guess it was 2017, in the last quarter of 2017, we decided, why don't we just get a for-profit channel partner agreement? Why can't we do it? And we submitted, and I don't know if they could tell, but the forecast that we gave them was completely wrong, not just lucky, but completely wrong. And they let us do it anyway. So we got a channel partner called Supply Chain Mavens, and so now we can do our classes, and we can go into underserved markets, like where chapters have gone by the wayside, and or don't have a local chapter.
Okay.
Or if we have existing clients that have supported us for years and years, and it's so much more fun. We can make decisions so much faster now. We can take advantage of opportunities and just run with it. And so it's so much happier for both of us now.
Definitely. So it sounds like you both kind of found your way and found your happiness together.
Mm-hmm.
So what is... So we're talking about APEX, right? And now, mm-hmm. I guess, called ASCM, right? APEX is just a certification. So why don't you tell, I guess, the listeners, if, you know, they're maybe not familiar with APEX, or maybe they've heard it but haven't read much about it, why don't you tell them a little bit about what it is and, I guess, you know, what type of significance does it hold in our industry?
Oh, sure. APEX started in 1957. I believe it was Cleveland, and it was a bunch of people that were involved in the automobile assembly industry, and they were just tired of the engineers treating the schedulers and planners and purchasers like dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were also very tired of having chronic shortages and not being able to run the line and having to stop the line and things like that. So they wanted to streamline the operations in the assembly plants. And so they got together, and Mr. Orlicky developed the order configurator, which turned out to be materials requirements planning. And I didn't get involved in APEX until I told you about 1991.
Yeah.
But it is an international nonprofit educational association. The new title of the American Supply Chain Management Association. Actually, it's not American. It's the Association of Supply Chain Management. Really is transparent to everybody who's a member and who comes to the organization. APEX has been nonprofit for a long, long time, and now, as it gets more global, it's no longer able to get all of the education groups and training programs from wherever they wanted to, because sometimes these companies are for profit.
Okay.
So they had to create an umbrella organization, and that's what the ASCM is for. Okay. That corporation status allows us to use both profit and nonprofit training providers, curriculum writers, instructional developers, that kind of stuff. So truly, it's still the same organization. We just have a different kind of corporate moniker.
Mm-hmm.
All of the curriculum still comes from the nonprofit side of the house, which is the APEX. So it has about 30,000, perhaps way more than that. I don't keep track of the membership, but we're in some 45 to 65 countries around the world, and it has given the manufacturing and distribution and logistics industries a common language, a common nomenclature. The dictionary that APEX has correct. It's in its, I think, the 16th edition, and it's online now, and we offer courses online now, and we've got four different programs right now for certification or an endorsement. And we also have principals. So we can teach people who are either in the office or the manufacturing or the distribution or the logistics industries from the front line, first entry level, all the way up to senior executives and leadership type of courses. So for the industry, it's been a great way to develop people from the ground up. And I think that the classes that they have been, I mean, they taught me how to run a successful small business.
Yeah.
And the chapter structure of APIC, the volunteer side of it, taught me how to run a successful chapter because we ran it like a business with strategic planning and things like that. I would never have been exposed to strategic planning if it hadn't been for APIC.
Interesting.
Even today, in our area, Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C., you can't get strategic planning training unless you do a really simple course through a community college, or you're at a graduate level in a supply chain leadership course. So there's not a whole lot of access, but we have a module called Strategic Management of Resources within our CPIM program that takes practitioners and gets them ready for promotion to the executive or the C office suite.
Interesting.
And I think being a part of that is very cool.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, like you just said, when I went to college, I didn't take any real courses that were geared around what I'm doing now in terms of logistics and distribution type of work. So I think like APIC, so then I found APIC, and I think APIC is like this great supplement education to that. And it's like so focused in on those things that are in the daily operation, and even more high level. So like you said, it takes you from kind of that almost floor level work to then also thinking about it more strategically at a higher executive level as well. So it kind of really gives you that great education of from the beginning to kind of the end and all the in-betweens. So now you're certified, I guess. Do you have every certification or?
Yeah, I kind of did the compensation thing instead of the college degree. I just have lots of letters behind my name. I have more letters behind my name than I have in my name. So yeah, I'm certified at the fellow level for the CPIM, and that's typically production and inventory management. That's the operations. And then I'm also a CSCP, a Certified Supply Chain Practitioner, Global Supply Chains. I'm a CLTD, Certified in Transportation, Logistics, and Distribution. So that gets the stuff that we build to wherever it's got to go to. And next week, I'm going to be doing the SCORE training. That's the Supply Chain Operations Reference. An endorsement credential. It helps small companies who are growing really fast to get the proper structure and also to get the integrated performance metrics that they're going to need to really start taking off. And I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it sounds like an exciting one. I got to look at that one. So I'm doing the CLTD now. I have my last class next week, actually. So
awesome!
Yeah,
I just finished.
So hopefully, I'll be certified maybe in the next 2 months.
Woo-hoo!
I'll have some extra letters at the end of my name then.
There you go. I hope I get to be the first one to use those beautiful letters behind your name.
Okay, I'll let you know as soon as I pass. So for someone, I guess, in the industry that wants to start getting certified, what certification would you recommend is a good one to start with?
Really, there are so many now. There's like about any organization or any enterprise, doesn't matter if it's for-profit, non-profit, it's a manufacturer or a service provider. There's about 13 different functions in an organization. And we've come to a point where there are associations for every one of those 13. So really and truly, the best advice I could give is going to be general. Think about where you want your career path to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in purchasing or contract negotiations or contract administration, you want to stay in the acquisitions and that, the ISM has a terrific certification for that, CPSM.
Okay.
We touch a little bit on global purchasing in the CSCT program for APIC, but ours is heavily on the collaboration of trading partners, we do a whole lot of stuff in technology, in CSCP. The Global Supply Chain Network of Trading Partners is for those kinds of folks. If you want to be in operations, like if you want to run a plant, or if you want to be a team lead, or if you want to be a scheduler or a planner, then CPIM in operations is, I don't know of a better one. We do a lot of inventory control in the operations, and I can tell you that you could be a retailer, you could be a distributor, you could be a manufacturer, you could be a homemaker, and you're always going to have inventory problems.
Definitely, yes. I agree. So 100%.
That's definite job security for trainers like me. So I would advise, find out what you want to do, and there's going to be a certification program for you that's going to sharpen the saw and get you to a point where you could implement these new ideas and methodologies and can really help your company get lean, streamline its processes, and do work a little less hard than what I did. Work smarter, not harder.
Yes, yeah, I think that's the overall goal, right? So,
yeah.
So thank you for your insight on APEX and ASCM. So you mentioned that, you know, no matter what role you have in life, you have some type of inventory problems, right? Or some type of inventory control issue at some point. So, you know, when we met, the workshop that I attended was the Principles of Inventory Control, I believe it was called.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your experience, I guess, with inventory control, and kind of, you know, what insights do you have for our listeners who are out there and maybe they're having some inventory control issues, or, you know, they're trying to get their inventory accuracy up a little more. You know, what's kind of your experience with that, and what have you seen has really helped to keep that tighter?
So, boy, that's a far-ranging. I have worked in companies where we instituted cycle counting, and when we were only about 83%, that was the electronics company that I was in.
Okay.
After about 2 years, we had gotten good enough to where we were about 98.83%.
Nice.
And out of the blue, this is a true story, out of the blue, our CPAs sent us a letter saying that you've proven to us that you've got your inventory under control and that we can trust the valuations that you put on it. Don't count the C items anymore. Whoa!
What
the C items were 50% of our population. So we had 10,000 line items that we were cycle counting. Now we only had to count 5,000.
Yeah.
So that was a huge boon to us. That proved to me that the APEX training paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, 98 point something isn't even good enough. You need to have at least a 99 point something something accuracy for your A items and your B items. You might be able to plan orders in a global supply chain network if you got 95% on your C items. But those are the items that are very inexpensive. There's lots of suppliers out there that you can buy them from, and the lead time is very short. So it's the A's and the B's that are your showstoppers. Sometimes we call those things the runners as the A's and the repeaters as the B's. And then the rocks would be the the C's would be the rocks.
They just sit, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So inventory is a company's highest, most important asset. If you can increase your inventory turnover, if you can decrease the number of days on hand of supply and still be able to ship your customer orders out at like a 95 to 98% on-time delivery, then you've really gotten it down and you're doing good practices. But you have to have that on-hand and on-hand on-order inventory has to be accurate. If it's not accurate and you do a nightly MRP run, you're either going to buy too much or you're not going to buy enough, and both of those are bad situations.
Definitely.
Production can't live with about 100 pieces. They have to have 98 pieces in order to get that job run. So it's kind of like a crusade to get folks to recognize the value of when you do cycle counts, it's not enough to just count what's there and make adjustments so that the book totals in your computer match what your physical quantities are. Your system is never going to get better unless you do the hard work of root cause analysis about why that error got made, and then go back and change the process so that it, that error is never permitted to happen again. And most people don't want to put that kind of hard work into it. I do a little game. We play a cycle counting game with candy. And when you've reconciled your inventory, then you get the reward of eating the candy. It's fun, but I time how long it takes people to count the little seven items in the kit. And it's usually somewhere between 2 minutes and 3 minutes that it takes. Then we go through what the errors are. And then we time how long it takes us to brainstorm what the cause, the root cause of the errors could be, and what would be the ways that we can change the process so that this error doesn't happen again. That part always takes at least twice as long as the counting.
Definitely. The research and the root cause always takes longer. I think people, sometimes people don't realize that, at least the people outside that are not looking at the inventory.
Correct. Don't realize how long
it takes to drill down to that.
Yeah. Brainstorming is one thing, but then, I mean, for some of the things, we might have to install security cameras in the stock room.
Yeah.
That could take several hundred thousand dollars, and it could take months for you to get it installed. But some of these things are as simple as changing the configuration on your part management so that the unit of measure is correct. But when you get all the anomalies down, it really comes down to training and discipline. And let's just face it, inventory is just not sexy. You don't get your name on a wall of fame if you saved the day and you've continued to have 99.87% accuracy. It's just discipline every single transaction, every single hour of every single day. And if you've got a good crew who believes in the value of an accurate database, they'll do it for you. But it takes really good management and leadership and examples and listening and doing the hard work of making sure that the processes are robust enough so that every day everything that comes in gets recorded and everything that goes out gets recorded.
Definitely.
I don't know if that there's any tricks. It's all just hard work.
Yeah. So I guess what would you say? So a lot of times, you know, my career has been primarily in inventory control. So, you know, sometimes when I talk to other people that work in inventory, and I've seen it myself at different companies where inventory kind of doesn't get the priority, I think, that it needs in the operation, right? And oftentimes you see, like, you know, at the first sign that they need some extra help, they're going to pull the inventory team away from what they're doing. And that kind of, you know, that makes the inventory kind of suffer a little bit. It kind of puts you behind in terms of getting things under control. So what would you say, you know, for anybody that's out there that's kind of dealing with that, with trying, because like you said, you know, inventory control, you know, you're not going to get a plaque on the wall. Basically, you're going to be at 98%, nobody's going to say anything. And as soon as you go below 98%, that's the only time anyone's going to say anything, right?
And it's not going to be good things.
Yeah. So, you know, what would you say for those people out there that maybe are struggling with that in their operation, kind of trying to get the resources that maybe they need to kind of get their inventory accuracy better and more on point? How can you kind of deal with that and combat that?
Well, inventory becomes part of your cost of goods sold. It's your raw materials for the product that you build within that particular profit and loss or income statement timeline. For every dollar of inventory that you can reduce in cost of goods sold, have an additional dollar of profit. It goes straight down to the bottom economic line. So I think that just by that, if you just know that there's a dollar-for-dollar ratio, and if we don't scrap parts, if we don't have to rework them, if we don't have to throw anything away, if we don't let anything expire before, so that we use it before it expires and we have to toss it, we can save thousands and thousands of dollars in inventory. And if we don't have to replenish stuff that we're not going to use until next month, then let's set up those kinds of replenishment cycles so that we don't have to carry as much inventory and we won't need as much space and we don't have as much material handling or cycle counting that we have to do. It's outside of your people that are the only renewable asset that a company has, inventory is the most critical. If you make any kind of products, or if you move any kind of products in logistics, or if you store any kind of products in distribution, it's such an important asset that you have to give it the best people, and they have to have the best training, and they have to have the best discipline and the best attitudes. So they have to have the best leaders, too.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I see that as a big thing, too. You know, I think that, you know, not everybody is necessarily built with the mindset and patience for inventory, I think, because a lot of times it can be incredibly tedious, not only the counting, but then the research on top of it, like you said.
That's right.
I think, yeah, you need to get that core group. And I remember, you know, one job I had, I came in and somebody was asking me, they were existing in a different distribution center, and they're asking me, you know, what do you think we could do to like improve our inventory? And I was like, well, tell me about how you're counting and, you know, how you're doing the process and stuff like that. And so they were telling me that, you know, well, we have one guy that counts, but we don't necessarily trust his counts. So we have somebody else go behind him and then count the same locations that he counted. So we don't have time to do additional counts. And I just, I stopped and I said, well, all right, that's your first problem, because you have somebody you don't trust counting, or that's, you know, not counting accurately. You need to just make that person do something else. And then you're basically taking up the time to do additional counts, and but you're doing the same count over and over. So I think that, you know, recognizing those people that either are really, you know, can do the inventory and have the mind and patience for it is really important. And, you know, it's just on the other hand, you know, recognizing that maybe this person's not meant for inventory doesn't mean, you know, they're not meant for your operation. It's just maybe they're not meant for inventory. You need to recognize that pretty quickly, I think. And, you know, I think that's really important. Like you said, the people are one of the most valuable parts about it, and they have to be bought into the inventory program, and they have to be bought into that discipline and making sure that, you know, they're not only doing the right thing on their end from the inventory perspective, but they're also watching, you know, the other people in the operation, and, you know, you're kind of not afraid to police that a little bit. And, you know, if they know somebody's doing something wrong, you know, they're not afraid to speak up about that, or they don't want to, you know, feel like they're the bad guy, I guess, even though sometimes you have to be the bad guy in inventory.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's really important that you said that. And, you know, thank you so much for talking to us. So how can people, I guess, get in touch with you, or if they're interested in some training with Supply Chain Mavens, how can they go about finding out more about you guys?
So we have a website. It's called supplychainmavens.net. And you can reach me. I'm Joni, J-O-N-I, at supplychainmavens.net, and email me.
Okay.
I'd love to chat with anybody about inventory.
I know you guys love inventory, and that was like the one thing, actually, I'll say real quick before we wrap up here. It's when I went to the class, you know, it's like kind of like if an inventory, you kind of sometimes feel like you're on your own, because like I know for me, like a lot of people will be like, man, like, you know, God bless you, like I don't know how you do inventory, I would never want to do inventory. And you know, going to the class, it was like, oh, I'm in this room with all these other people that love inventory, like this is like the room that I've been looking for like my whole career. So I definitely love it, and like your passion for it is great. So I'm so happy that you could come on the show and talk to me, and you know, talk to the listeners as well. So thank you so much, and we'll definitely post your information on the blog as well at thenewwarehouse.com, so people can get in touch with you. So Joni, thank you for being on the New Warehouse Podcast.
You've been listening to the New Warehouse Podcast with Kevin Lawton. Subscribe and check us out online at thenewwarehouse.com.